loved ones stronger. You are loved God more than loved me. We call it the street, Jesus.
Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
And you're listening to Live from the Path, coming from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper. What is it? What? What are you laughing at?
You just, the tone you started out with, just seemed, it sounded like a buzzer for a second. It was like, ah!
I was going to shout. That was exciting.
Yeah. Hey, I'm trying to,
yes!
Raise, welcome to Live from the Path.
Raise the level of the room here. Have you?
Have
you guys seen those like the faith healers that like smack people with their hand
yeah.
or whatever?
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then whiz bang, something happens. Have you ever heard anyone call that the psalm palm?
The psalm palm.
Psalm palm.
You've been psalm palmed.
Yeah.
I know, but I'm going to start.
Yeah, there's certain circles where that goes around.
That's wonderful.
Wow.
So add that to your repertoire.
I feel like I don't know anything because I did not know that.
Yeah. The psalm palm?
That's an indictment on what
that's
I know
bright.
In general.
Yeah.
Someone was smart that came up with that. That's
I don't know if smart is the right word. I mean,
I'd say so.
I'd like Psalm to see some palm? Context in whatever verse they think they got that from. But in any case, Psalm Palm.
All right. You're listening to Live from the Path. Here's what we got going on the show tonight. We are number 10 of the list of what I gained when I lost my religion from time.com. Number 10 is more realistic expectations about life. So we're going to see if that's what you actually gain when you lose your religion. And in the previous weeks, we talked about getting friends who are more fun, better sex, better health, getting your Sunday mornings back. Jesus has been robbing you of a Sunday morning for years. And it's about time that it stops. Giving credit where credit is due, less judgment toward myself for some things in a cryptic way, accepting people you formerly judged, rediscovery of a love of learning, and just a little bit of peace of mind. All those things are available to you when you lose your religion.
One of Jesus' mission statements, to seek and save the lost and take away the Sundays?
Yeah.
I believe so.
There's a number of commas after that that I feel like we don't embrace as a church. To seek and save the lost and ruin your sex life.
Yeah.
Seek and save the lost to take your health away.
Seek and save the lost. You're not going to have cool friends anymore.
There's a cost to discipleship.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's your friends.
And it's your buddy Luke from high school.
I can't hang out with Jerry anymore. All right, Jesus.
Hey, no, are you going to be a disciple? Oh, no. Does that mean we can't hang out?
Thanks for staying on the winning team, buddy.
All right, also, we got some What's Trending with Dan. Dan, what's happening in the news?
Let's see. We have a cancer patient that had chemo in the morning and went to a Garth Brooks concert at night. We have an actor who was intoxicated, jumped on top of a train, and they had, let's just say they had to use fire extinguishers to put him out.
Oh,
wow. Yeah. And then another one is a senior in high school who also had cancer, and they let her graduate earlier. It's kind of a neat little story with that.
Okay, cool. That's what's happening in the news. We'll talk about the news today. Also, advice on Dear Life from the Path. Mike, what do you got?
There seems to be some territory problems that a daughter has gone off to college. And there seems to be a spare room available,
ooh.
And the parents are having a hard time straightening that out. So I thought, well, that's us right there.
Oh, buddy.
Okay. All right, cool. We'll get to that. Also, Dave Herrick, a couple verses in the Bible that are...
Yeah, it's a teaching of Jesus, and because it's from Jesus, we believe it. But it's one of those things that it makes you scratch your head a little bit. So we're going to have a little roundtable discussion on that.
Roundtable on things that Jesus said that make you go, hmm. I'm the media man. I do the hard work.
Have you seen Arsenio Hall in the last like 2 or 3 years?
Yeah,
he looks exactly the same.
He does.
Yeah, he ran a show in
I thought it was reruns.
Yeah, like halfway through the 80s, and I happened to catch a glimpse of whatever show he was putting on like a month ago. He looks exactly the same. The man has not aged one iota.
He's got to be dyeing his hair.
Guy's got to be.
Isn't it just called the Arsenio Hall Show?
Yeah,
is that
I don't know.
You couldn't remember?
Well, I mean, I didn't go searching it out. I think I was just channel bopping, and I come across. I'm like, reruns of Arsenio Hall. I mean, what kind of low rent cable network is this? You know, it turns out it's a new Arsenio Hall, and he looks exactly the same. Anyway,
things that make you go, Arsenio Hall looking the same.
All right, here we go.
That was his bit. That's why I brought it up.
Boova wasn't born then.
Oh, right.
He was a little Boova in his mama's womb.
I don't think I was even that, man.
John
Y'all are old.
John Boova.
I've never been a little Boova.
I came out the size of a baby elephant. Let's be honest with each other. I plopped down. Hey, man, is that cake? John yeah, buddy.
Happy birthday.
John Boo with the first and second, and I think they're going to need to send three storks.
Yeah, I ate Boo the first and
big.
Second. There was no first and second. I ate them. I just showed up huge. Hey, man, where's the buffet?
All right, here we go. What I gained when I lost my religion. Number 10, more realistic expectations about life. I no longer believe that I am special, or that a ubiquitous, all-powerful, paternal figure is orchestrating events around me for my benefit, or for the benefit of anything or anyone, really. So I act accordingly. And I find that I don't get let down by things not going the way they were supposed to. I take responsibility for those things I can control, and I don't look for a savior to come and rescue me. Again, I think I am a better person for it. Thoughts, boys?
I don't remember the Bible ever saying that the universe revolves around you.
Yeah, so I want to know what church you went
God,
to.
Right. Why would God orchestrate events around you and for your benefit?
Yeah, so I'm to realize that God isn't a genie in a lamp that he can just decide that he wants stuff from, and when he doesn't get it, he can't get it. Good for you. I'm glad that that expectation that is absolutely unrealistic has been driven from your mind. That's ridiculous that you can read the book that I read and come out with, God is my paternal figure that takes care of me. That I want.
Okay, so I think this is rooted in the Romans 8:28, and we know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according to his purpose, King James. So I think that's where it's coming from. How is he misunderstanding that?
It still doesn't involve the center of the universe. God will work things out for you and towards your benefit insofar as you're a part of his kingdom and joining with him in his purpose and his mission. But ultimately, the universe revolves around God.
You know, yeah, it's still his purpose and his mission, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Random side comment. This guy's depressing.
Yeah, he is.
Like,
yeah.
I act accordingly? I act accordingly to the fact that I'm not special. Like, that's what he said.
Here's the deal. I don't get that correlation. Let's say you believe that God isn't real. Mm-hmm. I still feel like I'm pretty special.
Yeah. Like, If I don't have a creator to say created me, and I still came out like this, I'm going to be pretty excited about that. Like, if I did this, hey-o, there's no God to blame my personality on. That just makes that means that I have a bigger head about the situation.
I'm double awesome.
Double awesome. This isn't God's fault. This is all Boova. Like, I wouldn't treat it as I'm not special. I'd go, yeah, I did a great job on me.
So what is he – he says that's what I gained when I lost my religion. What is he not understanding here?
Well, I'd say for one, he's missing out on a lot of God-sized things. Like, here's the deal. When people have seen or been a part of or experienced God doing a God-sized thing, you can generally only attribute it into a God-sized thing. You know what I'm saying? And so he's basically taking himself out of that pool to being able to witness what the creator of the universe is even capable of doing. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So that's like saying... I don't know. There's some kind of magic Piper man. You know what I'm saying? That like that does amazing, great things. And you're like, I don't believe that he does those, right? The truth of the matter is, the guy does these great things. You've just not allowed yourself to be privy to them or believe that they actually happen. And God is very much the same way. When you take yourself out of the pool of believing that God does great things, you're right, you won't see. And you know what? I know probably a good amount of the church going population that sits in that exact same boat. They struggle with their faith so hard because they don't put themselves in the pool to see God doing God-sized things, you know. Yeah. And like the people that I generally look to for counsel or you know, advice in the way that I act in the kingdom of God, they're people that have let God do God-sized things, and like they'll sit there, they'll talk for hours. They will talk for hours on the things that God has done on a scale that only God is, that where God is the only measure.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of communities that'll somehow, as they're proclaiming the gospel and some kind of an evangelistic message, they make it very oriented around the audience, as though God's end game is you,
right?
And the person who's up there on stage and they're addressing the audience by all means, but God's end game was not you. I mean, you're a part of the plan, and you're supposed to come and join him in his kingdom, and he's inviting you into that, but you're blessed in order to pass a blessing along. He's not just saying, hey, here, I blessed you so that you can sit in the pew. I mean, and oftentimes that's what it's presented as, is hey, you're saved, and that's it. There's no after step.
Yeah.
No, that's true. Like if you look at the metaphor, like there's a train heading towards the kingdom of God, and there's great things on that train. Mm-hmm. If you love God, you'll get on the train, and then good things will be there. You mm-hmm. know what I'm saying? That's kind of the way that works. If you fold your arms and refuse to get on the train, you know, that's the way good things work out for you, right? By getting on the train and heading toward the kingdom of God.
Yep. And, you know, one of the other things that I thought was kind of interesting was says, and I find that I don't get let down by things not going the way they were supposed to. And some of that, I think as Christians, we sometimes introduce issues in our relationship with God by simply misunderstanding that we are supposed to know how things are going to go. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not our realm.
Mm-hmm. No.
Our realm is not where things end up. And, like, we get frustrated when we don't understand what God is doing or we can't figure out what it's pointing to. And it's a burden on us because we say, like, I want to know where this is going, or I want to know where God is pointing me. And it pulls us out of the faithfulness of day-to-day living for Jesus, where we want to kind of figure out where the end is. And that's simply not our business. It's not where things are supposed to go is not our business.
It's also not biblically consistent. You know what I'm saying? Like I've been kind of realizing it more and more on the things that I read in the Bible, but God really doesn't tell you or the folks in the Bible much.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Here's what you're going to do. And he sails in at the last minute. Well, like I see it as the last minute. God's like, that's when it was supposed to happen, you know?
Well, it's the last minute because he sailed in.
That's right.
What's going to happen after that?
That's right. Like once Jesus shows up, time you stop keeping track now. You know, it's like this is when it was going to end, you know? But like the biblical consistency is like, you know, he basically says, here, I want you to go do this thing. And it's over when he intercedes, mm-hmm. you know, when it shows up. And the same thing is true. I'm continually amazed here recently on how many huge earth life-changing things that he does in front of like one guy or like two guys or three guys at the most. You
right.
know what I'm saying? Mount of Transfiguration, biggest changer in the world, right? Reveals Jesus for who he is as the Son of God. Three dudes. mm-hmm. Three right. people. Not the whole world. Three guys. Born. The Savior is born in front of his parents. And eventually some redneck homeless shepherds show up. But, mm-hmm. I mean, these are earth-changing things that happen, and they're not done in front of everybody. They're done in, like, one or two people.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I find that amazing that, like, the changing of history can happen in front of a guy or two, and that's the way God has chosen to do it.
Yeah, and I think ultimately the perspective to be reminded of is if the future is not your business, like, you cannot possibly be let down by it. Like, if God otherwise is in control, whatever it is, it has to be good. He's either permitting it or orchestrating it, one or the other. And knowing those two things, and if it's not in your control, then either you have to accept that God is who he says he is and whatever it is will be fine. Your job is to be faithful in the means. Or you have to reject it and say, God is not a good God and whatever he's pointing to I don't like. And then you're just going to fight him on it. Like those are really only your two options to deal with life. And one of the things that causes more drama in life than many other things when it comes to our relationship with God is we are trying to pick out what God is going to do, and then we get disappointed if we weren't right or we're under the perspective that he wasn't right. And that's an extra weight that we're simply not designed to bear. It's his to take care of. You just got to be faithful in the means, which means mm-hmm. your tomorrow is irrelevant. You wake up in the morning and you do what you're supposed to do, and you follow through and be faithful in the means. And let God handle the ends, and it's not your burden. Even if 10 years from now, 5 years from now, 3 years from now, you lose your job. He's like, oh, maybe I should have prepared for that. No, no. Were you faithful in your work? Did you do the things that God told you to do? Then it's not relevant. Mm-hmm. It's not relevant, the outcome of that.
Yeah. Well, look at the story of Moses and the plagues. Mm-hmm. You know, God didn't tell him, here, you're going to have these plagues, and you're going to be a series of days. I'll bet every day he probably came home and just felt like a complete dork. Like, man, that didn't work. You know, it's like,
yeah.
I thought I had him where I wanted him.
That guy did that snake thing just like I did the snake thing. Why would you send me in there to look like a
What's
fool?
What's up with that? Mm-hmm. I sent frogs, you know. Are you kidding? You know, the river turned to blood, you know.
Yeah.
Well, and if God would just said, no, here, ultimately we're going to do the whole lamb thing, and it's going to happen later on in the cross, you know, he wouldn't have got that. He would have messed it up. And you just take it a day at a time. You do it as God directs you.
That is a faithful dude. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, six times the fool. He's rolling in there. Doing something, and they're
I
like,
knew that one would
ha! You know, yeah. I mean, how often would you go back to the God, of the God, you know, that you're trusting and go, hey, look, that fancy stick into a snake thing, they totally were onto that. You know what I'm saying? Another guy did it. Is that the best you have? You know, and like, I feel like I'd have a hard time rolling in there again doing the same thing. Yeah. Sometimes I give Moses a lot of crap, but I feel like he's, that's faithful.
Here's the deal. God was speaking to him, though, right?
Well, I mean.
So, I mean, it's a little different where you, like, I don't get.
No, here's though. I hear what you're saying, but like, I don't know. I can't tell you how many times that I feel like I've prayed on something and I feel like I've gotten an answer back. And not like 3 hours later, the shine has come off and I'm like, maybe that wasn't right. You know what I'm saying? Look at the nation of Israel in the Old Testament, for heaven's sakes. The Lord shows up in big ways and it'd be 2 weeks later, they're like, I don't know about this. This is junk. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's just human nature tendency. If God's not standing right in front of you, you know, you start turning around and going, maybe we'll do something different.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Anyway, Moses is a faithful dude. I take back everything negative I ever said about him.
How often are you harassing Moses?
Is this a constant thing?
Consistent
in your life?
Enough that I've brought it up.
You know. Sorry, Moses.
So it seems like this guy on two accounts has kind of usurped God's position.
Yeah.
So God, he's the one who determines the outcome, and he's getting disappointed. This guy is, because he's not the one who's able to determine the outcome. And the other one was,
because you're unskilled at drawing?
I really am.
Well done.
Yeah. It'll come to me.
Okay.
Later. Whatever.
Intriguing.
Yeah.
So the last thing, while Dave's thinking on that, the last thing he said, I take responsibility for those things I can control, and I don't look for a savior to come and rescue me. That's sad and depressing.
He will.
Again, I think I am a better person for it. Now, here's the question that I had, is what about that description points to it, like, is a virtue of his? What makes him a better person for saying, no one will save me? And not being let down by things that didn't go the way they were supposed to. Again, Like, what about those things makes him virtuous and says that he is a better person for it?
Nothing. That's essentially the patient who refuses treatment, even though the surgeon's right there. I mean, he walks out. He's taken responsibility for his own life, which is commendable. But the surgeon's right there.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Doesn't it ring odd that he's like, when things didn't go the way they were supposed to, according to who?
He's got that in quotes.
Oh, yeah.
Don't get let down by things not going the way that we're supposed to. Now, I do think the church contributes to that, because we have an idea of the way things are supposed to go, and that's foolishness. We've done the same thing he's called false. I think we are guilty of sometimes. We say, well, this is how God works. Well, like, you don't know that.
That to Joseph. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, tell that to Job.
Think of a story. Like, how many guys, like, stories in the Bible, could those guys have legitimately woke up and said, this is what God has me doing?
Yeah.
Before God did it. And it's just non-existent. And so the question really is, like, I think this is something the church is guilty of, is because we say things like, if you do this, God will do this. Yeah, you don't know that. It's not a transaction. God is in the transformation business, not the transaction business. He's not trading. He's not a flea market trading crap around with you.
No.
Like, he moves things around. He transforms things. You just need to sit back, be faithful, enjoy the ride.
No, that's right. I mean, the only thing that God generally promises to do that's fairly consistent, and Jesus was the same, like, he promises to be faithful to the kingdom of God. You know what I'm saying? And, like, by the train example, if you're on it, you know, like, good things will happen. But, like, in a way that glorifies the kingdom, and that's what he promises.
Yeah. Did you come up with that thing, Eric?
It was somewhere in that first sentence or two of what the guy said, but I can't think of it.
Okay.
What did he say?
I no longer believe that I'm special or that he should have been a ubiquitous, all-powerful paternal figure is orchestrating events around me for my benefit or the benefit of anything or anyone, really.
Oh, yeah. He's essentially, somehow he got this idea that the universe revolves around him. That was the other thing.
Yeah.
That's ultimately God's role, so he tried taking it somehow. What? Or a religion tried to convince him that he should take it.
No. Yeah. I agree. And I think it is not surprising for people to be let down by this. Like, if you decide that God is going to act in a certain way, or like you feel like God has told you what's going to happen, and then if that doesn't happen, it's one or two things, right? Either you say, I don't understand God, or I don't hear from him, he doesn't speak with me. Or two, God is a liar. He led me along, he didn't deliver what he said he was going to deliver. He promised these things and it didn't happen. And, like, both of those things cause separation between you and God. One, because you called God a liar. That's a mistake. Secondly, it's like you entered into a conversation that God may or may not have been having with you, assuming that he was, and then you're upset with him because he wasn't. And so when he's pretty clear scripturally, like, he's calling you to be faithful I'm not saying God's not in a box. He'll do what he wants to do. But, like, I'm pretty sure you're not nailed the faithful part yet. Mm-hmm. And so looking for exterior things is probably not worth your time. Just commit to being faithful in the things that he's called you to do and then let him handle the rest. Set up this infrastructure that says if God doesn't do these things, then he's not God. Mm-hmm. And then we get disappointed. And so, and the church does that. I have seen that over and over again in the church, where we do those types of things because we've from where we've studied, we think we know God, and we try to put him in on the train car and make sure that it goes to the places that we want it to go, and it's a mistake. So I think we can contribute to that. Otherwise, I think he's just he's represented God in a wrong way. He misunderstands himself. He's both not important enough. And just misrepresented his circumstances. All right, number 11. This is the final one from Neil Carter. What I gained when I lost my religion. We'll talk about this next week, but as a preview, it is a greater appreciation for the preciousness of life.
Yeah, I feel like the Lord did heavily ignore that. Yeah, absolutely. I'm interested to hear this.
There you go. All right, Dan Hudson, what's happening?
What's happening? All right, back in January, a 17-year-old high school senior in Texas was diagnosed with a non-treatable form of leukemia, so it's a terminal situation. Battled the disease for months, then the doctors informed her she only had a few months to live. So when her friends found out about it, that she probably would not make it to graduation, they put it together. Basically, they all came together and held an early graduation. All the students were there, the teachers were there, the principal had speakers and everything. It was really a pretty great thing. And her friends also put together an early prom for November, for this month, but she passed away. She didn't make it.
Oh.
So it's really a pretty sad story. Sounds like she was a pretty neat gal. Here's the question. What advice would you give to a teenager who has terminal cancer? This is a tough one. I wouldn't give any advice. I'd just do my best to keep them happy, fulfill their dreams during their final time on Earth. B, I would talk a lot about God and eternity and how awesome heaven will be if she wants to go there. Or C, I would probably avoid talking to them because I'm very busy and I really don't know what to say.
Interesting. Okay. Okay.
Start this one off.
Okay, go ahead, Dave.
I'm going to give half my answers B. I'd like to talk about the important things. But with the rest of the time, I'd really like to just listen to the teenager. Because they're facing some life experiences I have never been anywhere near. And they've got context and perspective on things that I just could not touch. And I'd like to just learn and listen from them. Yeah. So be with a lot of time listening.
Yeah.
You know, the thing is when faced with questions like this, I always like to answer in a way that I wish, that I hope that I would act.
Yeah, yeah.
I know how I would do it, but I always answer with the answer that is like the alternative version of me that I would hope would step up to the plate in this kind of situation. Mm-hmm. But, like, if I'm being honest, like, anytime there's a heavy situation of which that I don't know how to act, I hug a person. And then I hope that in the time that I'm hugging them, something grand will come to me to say. And then if it doesn't, then I expose that fact that nothing came to me. And now we can laugh at the fact that I'm a fool. And we just talk about the rest of life. I find that very helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that. Buva, what are your thoughts?
I agree with Mike in some fashions and also with Herrick because I want to say B, obviously, and have all the conversations about God, about heaven, and all the good stuff.
Yep.
And I think that I would. But I'm all about just trying to make light of situations, and not to someone's detriment, but to try and lighten up a mood. I mean, I can't even imagine what that's like, having to be in that situation of legitimately, you haven't had a lot of life, and it's about to end. I just can't imagine being there. So just trying to bring humor into it and bring, you know, as much of fun as possible and also incorporating the fact that, you know, making sure they know Jesus. And I think that's the biggest thing. But at the same time, you know, joking about the McDonald's bar at heaven, you know, it's right next to the soda fountain. You get all the McDonald's you want. Like, just messing around and having fun and making
this is what you say to people?
Yeah, I totally do. I'll not go. Like everyone. Like I,
this, was why, this is why Jesus sent people out two in pairs of two. You know what I'm saying?
Because I'm the guy that's just like, hey, man, you know, when you go to heaven, there's like a lot of double cheeseburgers. And then someone next to me is like, hey, man, that's not in the Bible.
Hey, I'd really like that heaven. That sounds great. Do I have to do anything? Yeah. No.
Seriously, when I was younger, my dream was – and I, how fat am I? Oh, my gosh. when I was younger, my dream was that there was some kind of fast food buffet that was never ending and always replenished in heaven. Like, hey, man, when I go up there, I'm going to have all the McDoubles I want.
That's right.
He's going to be no calories.
At the master's table, and instead he walks in and hey, goes, man. No, I stopped on the way. We're fine.
Hey, man, there ain't no diabetes in heaven, okay?
Oh, did you say all the McDoubles? Your high mark is something off the dollar menu?
Hey, man, I said all the McDoubles.
Oh, man.
It's not just like one. We're not going cheapo. There's like billions, man. Calm it down. No, I think that obviously the most important piece is talking about Jesus and making sure they understand that he's their Savior and the Son of God. But just trying to have fun, trying to make light of the situation. And I know that's difficult to do, but sometimes we get so bogged down with seriousness in that, and that drives me nuts because that's not my personality. I'm all about trying to find the humor and the positivity in this stuff, and I feel like I couldn't do that without trying to bring humor into it, and that's just kind of my personality and how I deal with that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So I try and make it fun.
All right. Dan, what was your answer?
McDonald's bar.
Well, you know, I was a hospice chaplain for several years, and
did you ever do the hug a guy tact?
I did not.
Did
no,
you ever do the
no.
McDonald's buffet?
Maybe in the future I'll try both of those. But I went in assuming I would be putting on the Jesus hat, you know, and I'm going to come in and save the day, and I'm going to tell them all about heaven, and hey, you can get to heaven. You, I mean, they all know they're limited. They're terminal. They're in hospice. They've signed an agreement. They're no longer taking anything to prevent or to help them get better. It's just make them feel more comfortable. And even in that setting, oftentimes people don't want to talk eternal. They want to talk about what's the weather. Oh, yeah, I used to play on the swing set. You know, you have to be very intentional. That's why I kind of put all three options on here. You have to be intentional, even in that setting, to say, no, let's turn this corner. You understand you will be seeing Jesus soon. You know, let's make this a great reunion. And it's a tough, even in a terminal situation. So I'm kind of I would naturally go to see. I'd naturally avoid the conversation. Like, hey, let's talk about baseball. You know, I don't really like
that's
baseball.
Easier.
It's easier.
Yeah.
You have to be intentional. That's like my point. Is you have to really say, no, we're going to talk about this.
That's like the one scenario I would imagine that you wouldn't have to start with. Can you imagine what'll happen to you after you die? But hey, apparently you need to.
Well, I suppose if you're that may the last thing to be, even though that's your reality. And maybe the furthest thing that you want to embrace, I can safely embrace that because right now it's a hypothetical to me, right? Mm-hmm. I don't feel death's door a knocking tomorrow.
Right.
But I suppose if you do, maybe it's something like you broach even less often because it's more realistic and it's something that maybe you know, you're obviously not looking forward to and you don't really want to consider.
Yeah, it's like I'm thinking about it all the time. I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
I think that's
yeah.
what some people are thinking.
And if you're expecting that you've got some bills to pay, then, you know, it's even less enjoyable to think about.
Yeah, maybe so. When I was like in junior high or something, I saw an interview on TV of a guy who was in a plane crash, right? And he saw people dying around him. He obviously survived. And he said his surprising thing to him was that he said that this stuck out to me, even as a junior high student. He said people die the same way they live. You would expect when they know they're going down and they're like on fire literally and it's going to go, you think they'd be saying, okay, God, you know, wow, I'm going to see you soon. Help, you know, sorry, repent. He said they were cursing and angry at God because this thing happened. He said then that statement was they die the way they lived. I took that into hospice and I found that to be true. People who didn't have time for God prior to being terminally ill still didn't have time. Some of them are still mad. Yeah. One person told me, hey, I didn't like God before. I don't like him now. I'm like, well, I'm the hospice chaplain.
Right. This is awkward.
Talk about spiritual things, you know. And, yeah, it was a sometimes very challenging. So, yeah.
I imagine that like that seems very difficult for a hospice chaplain. Like that just seems like a very difficult job. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe just for me personally, I have no more room thoughts on it. I guess I just that
well, the people who
hard.
Are believers is great because you can talk about heaven and that is the conversation.
Yeah,
you know, it's gonna be great. We want no more pain. You know, And
yeah, tell me more about Jesus and the McDoubles.
Exactly.
I got time.
Can I have cheese with that?
Sounds like an awesome band. Jesus and the McDoubles.
Okay, here's another one.
Okay.
A model and an actor who was apparently intoxicated climbed on top of a commuter train shortly after 5 a.m. Sunday in, doesn't matter where. Investigators say when he was on top of the train, he came in contact with the train's pantograph, a metal arm that collects the power from 12,500 volts overhead in the wires. The contact caused him to catch on fire. The crew used extinguisher to put him out, because they were investigating why the power went out, so they went up there, oh, there's a guy on fire. The man died from his injuries like a day or so later. Proverbs 23 talks about who has woe, who has sorrow, who has strife, who has complaining, who has wounds without cause, who has redness of eyes, those who tarry long over wine, those who go to try mixed wine. It goes on. Here's my question. What's your advice to a believer when it comes to drinking alcohol? Let's see, you turned a corner there. You're like, what? Well, I mean...
That is actually awful.
Go ahead, Dan.
I don't know what that was.
What is the advice to a believer that drinks alcohol?
Go ahead. We got to hear the options.
What's your advice to a believer when it comes to drinking alcohol? A, stay away from it. There's nothing positive that comes from a substance that alters your senses. This guy's senses were altered. I mean, why would you climb on top of a train, right? I mean, what was he thinking? B, moderation is the key. Know when to stop. Avoid drunkenness. Keeps you within the will of God. Or C, party on. It seemed to work for the Babylonians.
Well, hopefully this discussion doesn't go too long.
What was A again?
Stay away from it. There's nothing positive that comes from a substance that alters your senses.
I don't know. Actually, everything alters your senses to some extent or another.
Especially McDoubles.
you say McDonald's?
Yeah, I'm in B.
Yeah, I'm going to
B camp.
Yeah.
Control yourself.
Unanimous B around here.
Here's the thing. The only downside I've ever seen to B is that you get these dudes. It's where the phrase, like, there's always phrases that people catch on to, and you're like, that don't make no sense. But there's always a little bit of truth in all of them. But, like, you give them an inch, they take a mile.
Yeah.
And these are these guys. You know what I'm saying? Like, if moderation means I can do whatever I want as long as I don't leave my house. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, because what it all boils down to, this alcohol discussion is a stupid, it's a non-starter. What it all boils down to is whether you trust Jesus with your joy or not. Right? Do you trust him that there's more joy in your life to be found without getting crappy at your house? Even though you didn't leave, you can't get charged with a crime, you didn't cause anybody trouble, you weren't out in public. But, like, do you believe that Jesus says there's more joy in moderation than there is in excess? And the truth of the matter is, if you're looking for caveats for you to be able to do what you want, then the truth is you don't trust him. That's it.
Yeah.
I don't remember Jesus saying that.
Saying what?
There's more joy in moderation than in
well,
excess.
It's generalized, I suppose. Between I suppose that's lines. Not a direct Jesus quote.
He was at that wedding. He made the wine, you know, he said.
Yeah, that I remember.
Well, I believe that he supported wine being distributed, but then did not support drunkenness. Do I need to string two or three texts together here, Eric?
No.
Okay.
I'm with you on the against drunkenness thing.
Okay,
so
fantastic.
We're good.
I saw... It's weird that you're asking this, Dan. I probably saw three or four posts on my Facebook wall this week from freaking goons talking about the Bible and alcohol.
Really?
Yeah, and I get a little frustrated here to the extent, like, what some people are fighting for.
Yeah.
Like, they're fighting.
Were the discussions in King James? I'm just curious.
No, some quotes, yes. Some King James quotes.
Just curious.
Some King James quotes. So, like... Like, what they're basically fighting for the most liberal perspective that there possibly could be, but it seems that the intention is to make Jesus look cooler. Like, that's what polishes him up. Like, what he's offering is it, that's not what we're discussing. We're not going to discuss his kingdom. We're not going to discuss his work. We're not going to discuss his ethic. We want to talk about how cool our Jesus is because we think it gives you license to do something that you're already doing without a relationship with him. And, like, it's the motivation behind that discussion that is really, really irritating to me. I mean, people that I know have a heart for Christ, and they're using that influence for other people, fighting for something that is stupid.
Yeah.
It's stupid. Like, and I don't even disagree with them on the base nature of what they're talking about, but why they're talking about it is extremely disappointing. And they want to fight with people, and they want to make it a legalism issue if you don't drink, or if you don't want to talk about it in the way that they want to talk about it. And it's foolish. It's just foolish. And I've seen, I don't know. Yeah, it's been a high number of people lately that are having that conversation. It's like, yeah, I get it. Like, that's the big thing on the tip of our minds, kingdom work. And we want to talk about whether we can kind of draw them in with the thought that you can get, you know, it's okay to get drunk because Jesus served wine and he hung out with prostitutes. But, like, he did that because he was further in the kingdom of God, not because he wants to hang out with prostitutes and be close but not over the line. Like, that's not what he was doing at all. They're not fighting for what Jesus was fighting for. Just as we said, you can't separate. If you separate the morals of the kingdom from the kingdom itself or from Jesus itself, all you get is a moral code. And that's and people will butt against that. What they're also trying to do is separate the actions of Jesus and the reason that he was doing them from who Jesus was. And they're fighting for that perspective as well. And it's just as false. It's false on the legalism end. It's false on the side that says, oh, great, he hung out with tax collectors and sinners. We should go hang out with prostitutes. Unless you're trying to further the kingdom and to serve people, then no. No, that's not what it is. You're separating what Jesus did from who he was and what he was out there to do. But you want to fight for that. You want to get in someone's face and fight for that perspective for what? To the gain of what? Ah! I've seen a lot of that lately.
I'm with you.
It's really irritating me.
I'm with you, brother.
All right.
Last one. Another cancer patient. This one is kind of a cool story, though. She had a chemo in the morning. She has some pretty advanced cancer. Had chemo in the morning. Attended a Garth Brooks concert in the evening. This is like this past weekend. Took a sign that read, chemo this morning, Garth tonight, enjoying the dance. He has a song called The Dance, right? And when Garth Brooks began singing the song, The Dance, she was allowed to go up front and hold the sign up so he could see it. And he saw the sign. He went over to like the edge of the stage and sat down and sang directly to her. And then he stopped the song. He took the sign. He gave her his guitar. And he started walking around talking. This is what he said. I had to hear it about four times to get this right. So it could be slightly off, but this is about what he said. Sometimes I'm one of those guys who says if God would just get a big old hand that comes out of the sky and write, I exist, then there would never be any doubt. Well, I want to tell you right now, God just stuck his hand out and he held up her sign and he was telling you, encourage her with the cancer. Here's the question. This is an open-ended question, right? If God were to stick his hand out and write something in the sky today, what would it be?
Mini, mini, tackle person.
No, he already did that one.
I only know one phrase.
You're a one-trick pony hand. Get out of here.
Let me keep the golden chalice.
I start in the Adams family. What more do you want?
I don't know. I don't know. Herod, you don't understand the context of I am when I use it.
Hey, now that would be cool. If he wrote I am in the sky, I'd poop my pants. I'll tell you what. I would walk out of the store with a bunch of groceries, and I would see I am written in the sky, and I would fall down, and I would weep, and I would immediately decide whatever I was doing that day was not important.
I'm going to hire one of those airplane guys.
That's the whole man.
Just messages.
I will freak out. Just like they try to freak those people out with the phony raptures, you write I am in big letters anywhere, I will freak out. That's a guarantee.
Have we talked whether it's possible to delay the... Now, see, here's not that I would want to, but just let's say hypothetically, because God says that you will not know the hour of the day, can I delay the second return of Christ by buying a billboard and just daily changing it out to say, it will be today, it will be today? Because at some point, I will be right,
exactly,
and I will be able to say, I knew.
They will,
no.
I believe.
God will go, you guessed way over. You guessed for 4 years, that doesn't mean you know.
That's right. God will look at Moses and say, well, Ben dies in 2054, so I guess we'll have to do it in 2055 as his daughter follows his footsteps.
I'm not motivated to do this. I just something I was pondering.
You think you can derail God's plans? No.
Dude, well, Ben, put the sign out again. We can't do it now.
Would I be provoking him to destroy the billboard? I'm just running things are running through my mind.
The billboard just lights up, and I am.
He actually out?
Has no, shown. Has shown very very large amounts of affection for legalistic attempts to bolster him to doing things. I'm sure this could end nothing but well. Kill Ben, but kill him.
Just kill him. Just do it. He seems to be under the false pretense that he can blackmail me. Yeah. He no longer functions as a human.
That's right. Tattoo I am on his elbow. Freak his brother out, too.
Hey, man, did you have that tattoo last night? No.
No, I didn't do anything. Why? What do you see?
What does mine say? I am. Actually, oh, crap.
I really like I am as the option, Dan. Yeah. I really think that's a solid option.
I
right
am
there.
Is mm-hmm. a pretty sweet option.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
That's because we get the context. I don't know if my neighbor, you know, John, would get that.
They would
hey,
be
man,
freaked
be
out. They say,
starter.
"What is I am?"
And I
am
what?
Tell
they
you
think
what
well,
I
they
am
run
is.
Out of gas. They didn't finish it.
Okay, well, so hold on. What kind of non-context item do you think Jesus would say?
I don't know. That's my
hey,
question.
Everybody,
what did he say?
I'm real dash God.
Like, what's up?
Like, exist. What were all those billboards?
Like
that were
the cheesy
attributed
billboard.
To God?
Yeah.
I know what you did last night.
That's right. The third commandment. I meant that one. God.
Listen to me.
Next time, take your own name in vain. You know.
Did I tell you Ben tried that for like 6 months?
I did.
Ben was trying to give up swearing, so he just started taking his own name in vain.
I like that. Oh, Ben, darn it. Oh, Ben Boost. I'm going to start using that. Oh, Ben.
Hey, it works. I'm just saying it works.
It lasted for about 6 months till he came and he's like, hey, man, the Lord says I can't take anything in vain because I don't mean anything. And so it was the hair on the head and the what was it? Well, I can't remember what that verse was. I don't know. He was talking about taking names in vain, like don't use the temple, don't use my name,
don't
use
swear
heaven.
Upon these things.
Yeah, don't swear upon these things.
Let your
they,
yes be yes, no
yeah.
be no.
And so I think that put the kibosh to it.
Rough time. Anyway, if you want to use me as a transition, that's cool.
Oh, man. Totally doing it.
Hmm. Yeah.
I'm sticking with I am.
I feel like he's not going to write anything via plane. Nothing says, Lord of all, like using a technology that's been around for 70
yeah,
years.
Yeah, John's 1954 Cessna for 75 bucks an hour.
Wait a minute, God works in smoke signals?
Like, wait, time out. Why are we assuming it's clouds? He could be using stars to write it.
Ooh.
Hey,
daytime
man,
stars.
Way cooler.
Yeah.
Look up in the night sky. I am.
I am. There, underneath it in small print is, these are the days of Elijah. You're like, dang it, Elijah.
That's a crap in my pants moment. I look up in the sky. It says that in stars. I'm like, I'm done.
You see a maniacal chariot pulling away.
This is me.
I said you could.
Who gave Elijah the chariot?
I said one time, Elijah. One time does that chariot leave this yard.
You're abusing the power of the chariot, Elijah. Come on.
Boova wanted a McDouble.
Here's the deal. If you're
he'd write, it's trumpet time.
That'd be awesome. What's trumpet? Oh, no.
I don't hear anything.
Followed by a bunch of angels in hammer pants.
Yeah. Doom.
Okay, this is borderline getting to be a problem. We better skip out of this conversation.
Better bail, Dan.
This was a mistake. Sorry about that. I was trying not to pinpoint God and give you three options. I thought I'd, open it up. It's
probably
this,
good
this was a poor choice.
To choose your own
right choice, wrong venue.
To choose your own adventure, life in the path. It's not a good idea.
This is not the right crowd to go, hey, man, what do you think God would say kind of deal? It's not already written in stone. We probably shouldn't be trying.
We'll give Mike 20 points for saying I am.
All right.
I really like eggnog. God. Thought I made a really good decision on the platypus.
Best thing I ever done.
Hey, man, have you seen the novelty eggnogs that are available?
I can't.
I like the real ones.
Here's the deal. Here's real life situation. I cannot control myself around eggnog.
Yeah.
Like, I have a debilitating disease that has to deal with sugar that literally could kill me at any point in time. And I go past eggnog and I think to myself, meh. It's worth a shot.
Today is gain.
Exactly. I look at that stuff, I'm just like, here's the deal.
These are the days of
boo. God, you know my heart on this. I don't know why you created this eggnog thing, but like, I'm not the guy that goes and buys the eggnog and thinks, hey, man, I can take this back to my place. I can have a small glass, and I'm just fine. Like, that'll take care of my sweets for a while, and then I'll have another small glass, like, the next night. I'm, like, the guy that buys it, immediately feels bad about the decision, and then needs to get rid of the evidence, but is not willing to throw it away, so that means the evidence is going down my face. People are driving past me on the interstate as I'm chugging a thing of eggnog, and they're staring me down.
They say, that's a different cat right there.
Like, hey, man, that suspension doesn't look too great. Maybe you've had too much eggnog. Betty. I know that I've had a good holiday season if I do not buy a thing of eggnog and chug it. It's ridiculous.
I feel like I judge my life by different standards, but I'm happy,
hey man,
for yours.
You're also not a fat guy, so I thought heaven was McDoubles. Why is anyone surprised by the eggnog conversation?
Hey, I heard you were dying. Can I give you a hug and then say McDouble in your ear?
Mike, have you ever hugged me and whisper McDouble?
You haven't been in the straits, and I didn't know what to say. But if you ever get in those straits, I will hug you.
Hey,
heavily.
That could, Mike, that Mike could be prophesying into your life upon your impending death if he ever hugs you and goes, McDouble.
That's terrifying. Is that how God's going to work in
this? Some of this.
Finally, a little control. You better stay away from me, Bubba.
Oh, man, that's terrifying.
All right. Never mind. I was going to talk about specialty dairy products, but it seems it's a cause of the brother to stumble. I'm not
hey, no, do it. Do it. I've already given in. It's all good.
Okay, so here's the deal. I was driving in the show tonight, and I started praying a little bit, and I was thinking about some stuff, and I thought, you know, I was trying to pinpoint why I have a hard time praying sometimes. Like I get distracted. You know, usually if I'm having a conversation with somebody, I'm pretty good about staying off my phone, not listening to the radio, you know, but for some reason when I'm praying, like, I get easily distracted. My mind starts to wander, and I'm just having a hard time, you know? And so I told God about that. I'm like, I don't know why I'm having such a hard time with this thing. This is getting to be difficult. And I was thinking about it for a second, and I thought, you know, I like to frame my prayers having a conversation with God, but it's not that, because when I have a conversation with somebody, I ask them how things are going. You know what I'm saying? That's the main diving board to get the thing rolling. And so I gave it a shot. I said, I was praying, and I'm like, Lord, how are things? I assume they're great, but I'm just going to think about that for a while, how I think things are with you. And here's the deal. It's like, legitimately, they're fine. You know what I'm saying? God's doing great. But, like, I think the simple act of, I don't know, me paying attention of what I think that he's got going, I don't know, for some reason it made that conversation easier for me. You know what I'm saying? Not so much that I think that he was going to bring his woes to me, because that's not going to happen. But, like, more I thought, it puts it in an easier perspective for me to think, like as him and I are having a conversation, I'm like, how are things going up there? And it just makes me think about like all the people that he's currently loving on and the earth that he's keeping moving. And I thought, I don't know. It changed the way that I prayed just a little bit, on my way. And I stopped getting so quite distracted, you know? And so anyway, I just thought about that on the way in. It was an odd move.
Do you notice your verbal audible prayers are quite different than just your internal prayers?
Yes.
I mean, mine are just like completely different. Like when I'm in a group and I'm praying out loud, it's like I'm like a third grader. And Jesus, I like sharks and, you know, but like when I'm just praying, it's like a whole different thing. And I don't know.
Actually, I caught myself using some very biblical language that I don't normally use when I was praying to him. Same trip in, you know, I'm like, Lord, I feel like I want to have you close to my heart. I just want to be in more fellowship with you. And I'm like, I don't use the word fellowship ever. I'm like, Lord, I didn't mean that. I just said it because I feel like I'm programmed to say that. Let's start over again. How's things going? You know what I'm saying? Like, because here's the thing. I decided that I'm not going to be okay with a lackluster phony prayer life. I'm just not. Yeah, I'm like, yeah. I can't do it anymore. It's foolish. And so every time I catch myself using a church word that I don't use in a conversation ever, I stop and I say, you know what? Let's start over again. Let's try this. Honest Mike's going to come to the table. Let's talk about this again, you know? And like, I don't know, it seems like if I'm, the more that I'm willing to put the time to try to clean out some of the phony, I'm not saying you can't use the word fellowship, you know what I'm saying? If you normally say fellowship or whatever, then have at it. I don't say that word, you know what I'm saying? I know when I'm phoning it in, and I don't want that. And so like, I find it more beneficial just to chop up my prayer as soon as it starts getting off track and say, you know what, let's start over. Hi, I'm Mike. You know, I feel like I'm not talking to you honestly as I should. Let's keep this up, you know? So anyway, just a little bit of advice. You having a hard time in your prayer life? Ask God how things are going. He might answer.
I like that.
Here's the deal. This is my other trick, too. Every once in a while, when I feel like I'm having a hard time putting God in perspective for me, sometimes when I read the Bible, I just replace his name or anytime he speaks with you said. And so, like, I will read the creation story when it says God created blah, blah, blah. I just said, and then you did this and this and this and this. And then you did this. And then you did this and this and this. Pretty cool. Or, like, when we read the New Testament where, like, Jesus got up and spoke to his disciples, I will say, and then you got up and spoke to your disciples, and here's what you said. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It seems to make it like
Mike's conversational translation.
It is. It's like the Mike Henry commentary on the Bible. You know what I'm saying? I just replace every time because I read it out loud. You know, and instead of just reading in my head, I read it out loud, and I act like I'm having a conversation and just telling his own story back to him.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds like you're reading the Bible back to him to make sure it's right.
Yeah, I don't know, it just seems like a more, it adds a lot more personal to it when it's not, you know, Jesus in the clouds, Jesus the unknown, Jesus the intangible, and I just say, here's what you did.
I love it. I'm just hearing God going, mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I know. That's why I wrote it down. Yeah. Fool.
And then you did this. Mm-hmm. Sure did, Mike.
Yeah, absolutely.
You going to ask me how my day was again?
Going to make up something funny about Elijah?
Hey,
terrible.
Man, that Stars gag was great, Mike. Nice job on that one. Really proud of
that's
you.
That's right. Thanks, Mike. Tally. I don't want a tally. Well, you got a tally. Troy's going to eat McDonald's in front of you for years.
Devin, here it is.
Here it is.
I'm going to lose weight eating McDonald's. That's heaven for me. Like, what diet you on? The God diet. That's what I'm on. God works in McDouble ways. I'm done.
I enjoyed how much Boova enjoyed that.
Hey, man, I thought to myself, hey, man, that's clever. Throw that out.
Has anybody copyrighted McDouble ways? Because that's me.
Hey, man, that's how my brain works. It's straight up just like, all right, that might be fun. Let's give it a shot. Just throw it out there. Like that right there, and no one laughed.
It wasn't
Exhibit
fun.
A. Yeah.
I think everybody's tired. Everybody's
that's
tired.
That's probably your point.
I waste all my laughs on McDoubles. you're listening to Life from the Path. By the way, Life from the Path is brought to you by Westfield Veterinary Hospital here in Johnston for all your pet care needs. Hey, it's starting to get a little chilly out. Make sure your pets are taken care of, man. You know, just because they got a coat on, like the fur on, doesn't mean they can stand up to temperatures that are 15 degrees. I mean, if you put a coat on and stand outside, that doesn't mean you're going to be all right either, all right? So take adequate care of your pets. It's also a good time to get them checked out. Make sure everything's on the up and up. So take them to Westfield Veterinary Hospital. Go to westfieldvethospital.com. You can set up your appointment online or give them a phone call and tell them Live from the Path sent you. It'll get you a weird look and then, you know, maybe a toothpick.
All right. So here's my story. I have these three fish.
Okay.
All right. And I didn't take them to Westfield Vet, and two of them died.
That's what I'm talking about.
That's sad. Oh, that's man. Bad decision making.
Yeah.
We've told you for a long time you should take them to the Westfield Veterinary Hospital.
I know, but I didn't.
The one's on the last fin, too.
He's okay. We sold him off to someone else.
Who was it? Good decision maker.
A more responsible fish owner.
Exactly. To a fishmonger. Yes. Yes, indeed.
Hey, man, they don't normally take care of those fish really well. They kill them.
No, I think he was selling it as a pet, not selling it for food.
No, they take care of them in the Italian sense.
Oh. So that they sleep with the fishes? What do you mean?
Sleep with his brother. All right. Yeah, anyway, take your pets into the Western Vet Hospital. Now's the time to do it. Get off your duff and make that happen. Second of all, go to EisenlauerTeam.com. Hey, Bob, Bill and Bob and John Eisenlauer, just some sweet dudes to work with. And if you're looking to buy or sell a house in the near future, these are the guys to talk to. Go to the Eisenlauer Team or EisenlauerTeam.com, and they can help you out with all your buying and selling needs in the Des Moines metro area, Ames, or whatever. And so get a hold of them. Tell them thanks for sponsoring Life from the Path. And you know, and that you want to sell your place. And
Hoover, are you in the market for a house?
No.
Why not?
I don't have the money.
The Fed's holding tight. It's time. You're going to run out of this thing, Boova.
No, I'm not at all. No, I'm...
No, despite all reason and logic, I'm out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's completely reasonable for me to have no money down whatsoever and then spend way too much money on a thing that I don't need right now.
Well, don't
You're
do
absolutely
that.
Right.
No.
That's awesome. It's a really good decision.
I'm not saying don't buy a house. I'm just saying don't buy a house in the scenario of which you described.
You can live in Detroit for pretty cheap.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But the money I don't have.
No, it's cheap to live in Detroit.
Oh, well, then why don't you sell a house?
Yeah, that's a way better idea. Right, you should just sell a house. Yeah,
I'm just going to walk in. All right, here's the deal. Y'all don't live here anymore. I'm bigger than you, and I've eaten a lot more McDoubles than you have. I'm going to sell this house now, and all that money's going to me so I can buy another house. All
right? Here's your realtor. Yeah. John, talk to him.
Yeah. Eisenhower Team, do it.
All right. You've been listening to Live from the Path. Hey, Mike, do you got we're gonna have to probably hit the break before we hit the Jesus verses. You got one advice?
Here we go.
Okay.
Dear Life from the Path, my husband and I have been married for 8 years. We have no children of our own, but he has an 18-year-old daughter from a previous relationship who has been coming over every other weekend and holidays since she was 10. Even though she lives with her mother, she has a dedicated room that's packed to the gills with her clothes, games, toys, etc. I would like to repurpose her room now that she's off to college. My husband says no. We don't have a guest bedroom, so I feel strongly that it makes no sense to keep a room intact when we could use the extra space. I've made many sacrifices as a stepmother over the years, and I feel I deserve to finally stretch out a bit and enjoy the extra space. By the way, all the furniture in her room happens to be mine, and her room is used to be my guest room before we got married. My friends agree with me, but my husband says he needs time to adjust. I'm really upset and would like an objective opinion. Am I being unreasonable or asking too much too soon?
I'm always leery when people start using phrases like "I deserve."
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've sacrificed so much already being a stepmother. Yeah. Of course you have.
I deserve a spare room for my own.
And
my elliptical needs its own space, all right?
She's saying that the stuff in the room is hers anyways. So
it's pretty much her room.
Yeah. I mean,
hey, go enjoy the furniture.
You're there.
Yeah, if it's a spare room, they can still use it when the daughter's not there.
Yeah.
She want to redecorate, I guess? Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, what's the problem?
I'll sleep in anything if I'm visiting somewhere for a night. I mean, if it's friends, I don't care if it's their daughter's.
Hey, man, anything's a step up from the ground.
Here's the deal. The man is wrong
with
the situation,
literally,
right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, let's just be honest. Yeah. The kid's going off to college. He's 18. I don't even know what toys she's keeping in there. But, you know what I'm saying?
Creepy.
Yeah, that's going to make you money. He's hanging on. Yeah.
He's having a hard time. Now, what you could do is try to be generous with this man that you claim to love and realize, just step out of the situation for a second and realize he's having a hard time. His baby girl grew up. She went to college. He's not handling it great. Just be a little bit generous with him. Now, great, if he keeps this stubborn-headedness going on for, whatever, more than 6-8 months, you know, maybe we'll have this conversation. But, like, he's having a hard time. Can you love on the man? Be a little patient with him. Just, you know, there's got to be a way that he's going to sooner or later figure out that his daughter doesn't need a bunch of Weeble toys at 18 years old every other weekend, and she's not going to come back there and live. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
Right? She is right. That bedroom could probably be repurposed and probably should be repurposed. Otherwise, you're just wasting the space. Now, but the attitude of which she's coming it at is completely out of line. It's really selfish and has no feelings for what her husband is going through at all. Like, I can't imagine the day my kids go off to college. I'll probably weep. But, like, can you be generous with me for a little while until I get past this thing? He will get past this. It's not going to go on forever.
And that has been her temporary home for years, eight years. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's part of the blended family thing. I mean,
you haven't been, whatever, however she described it, being overly gracious or you've put up with this and this. You're a stepmom.
Yeah, right. That's your job.
You agreed to be part of this when you married her father.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the high horse that you think you rode in on, it's just a regular horse. You know what I'm saying? That's what you agreed to. And if you're having a hard time with that now, I can't imagine the first 8 years of bliss that you've enjoyed. It just seems like a very rough way for you to live through life thinking that you got shortchanged for the last 8 years.
Yeah.
I'd say give her at least another year, just because the girl coming back from her first year of college, that first summer is kind of an eye-opening, you know, life has changed type of a deal for her. Let her get through that first summer, and then, you know, after that point, start talking about changing the room around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. She's just being a little heavy-hearted.
All right, here. Yeah, what's the secular advice?
Secular says, if you want peace and tranquility under your roof, my advice is to slow down and don't jump the gun. Your husband appears to be suffering from a form of empty nest anxiety right now. Let this play out for another year or two so you can see how his little daughter has been be using that room. It would also be better for her not to feel that the minute she left town, you dismantled her room.
Yeah, that's
you'll be patient. Time. Trust me on this. You'll look like a saint. If you don't, you may come across as a heavy-handed and labeled a wicked stepmother, very much like you are now.
Yeah, no, that sounds about right.
Good.
Hey, you're listening to Life from the Path. If you're listening on the Truth Network, 99.3 FM, we've got to let you go. If you're listening on the podcast, hang out for just a few moments, and then we'll be right back with you. You've been listening to Live from the Path. Yeah, I did. No, that goes separately. Yeah, our podcast stuff is different from what we provide to. Hey. You're still listening to Life from the Path. We're just talking amongst ourselves.
Thanks for staying.
Yeah, really. Yeah, thanks for hanging around.
You won't regret it.
I can't. But we don't overpromise
yeah,
things.
That's probably
we can't.
A valid point.
Yeah, all right. All right. So, Dave Herrick, you got a couple things from Jesus.
All right, yeah. So, Jesus is obviously a brilliant guy. I mean, he just oozes wisdom. Some of the things out of his mouth are just timeless classics. And a lot of what he says is, well, quite frankly, over the heads of even the most brilliant of philosophers and yet still attainable by the smallest of children. Mm-hmm. And so what we're going to take a look at here is there's a couple of statements that Jesus gave that I'm going to label Jesus's blank checks with a question mark to it. And I'm going to read the statement that Jesus gave, and tell you where you can find it in Scripture. And then I'm also going to just describe some of the context leading up to it, because I don't want to just pull things out of context. And then kind of pull around the room and get an idea of, all right, well, what is Jesus saying here? What, how can this be best understood?
Can I ask you a question real quick?
Yeah, of course.
Are you going to wear that scarf the whole time?
No, I'm probably going to go home and take it off and go to bed.
I mean, for the meantime, while you're reading the questions, are you going to wear that scarf?
Would you like me to?
I just need to know the answer to this thing.
I hadn't planned on it. Okay, I hadn't planned one way or the other.
Okay, fair enough. Go ahead.
So, do you have a strong opinion?
Yeah.
It's Mike. Mike always has a strong opinion.
Well, Mike, what would you like?
Even if it's pointless stuff that there's no reason to have a strong opinion on it, it's Mike. He's got a strong opinion.
It looks like a napkin.
All right, I'll take it off, if that's what you'd like. All right, so here's what Jesus
Mike
said.
Mike Foose, ladies and gentlemen.
All right, he says, therefore I tell you, whatever you ask in prayer, believe that you have received it, and it'll be yours. So this comes to you from Mark 11:24 and also Matthew 21:22, and both of those sections read almost identically. It comes in the time right after Jesus clears out the temple. He curses a fig tree. His disciples see that that tree is withered. And Jesus turns to them and he tells them to have faith in God. And with faith, you can move a mountain. So how should we take that statement that Jesus says? I tell you, whatever you believe, whatever you ask in prayer, believe that you received it and it's yours. Is this a blank check? All right, I'll let you guys think about that a little bit.
Okay.
I'm going to follow it up with a similar statement that John makes in, or that Jesus makes in John, and he says, "Here, truly, truly, I say to you, whoever believes in me will also do the do works that I do, but greater works than these he will also do, because I'm going to the Father." And here's where we get to the point. Whatever you ask in my name, this I will do, that the Father may be glorified in the Son. And if you ask anything in my name, I will do it. So once again, it sounds like a blank check type of deal going on. So the context for this one is it's John 14:12-14, and it's at the Last Supper, and he starts this section by saying, don't let your hearts be troubled, believe in God. So there's a reoccurring theme in both of these of trusting God. He goes on to say, hey, I'm the way, the truth, and the life. Thomas says, show us the Father. And Jesus says, all this time you've spent with me, don't you believe that I am in the Father and that the Father is in me? So that's kind of how he's backing up these claims that ultimately God's going to be the one paying for these. So what is this? What's going on here? Is Jesus promising us the ability to alter reality based on our prayers?
No, Herrick was right beforehand. I'm out.
All right. So I'm going to take a stab at this. Now, I'm going to preface this with I'm fully willing to accept that I may be completely wrong on this, but my first initial thought is, if you're taking this stand and you have this kind of faith to be able to ask of these things in Jesus' name, and you're really kind of stepping up and say, he's telling you that you ask in my name, you do this, if you truly believe kind of deal. The kind of person that has that kind of faith and the kind of person that's able to make that claim of having the faith necessary to be able to invoke something in Jesus' name isn't really going to take that as a blank check and isn't going to take that as I can ask for anything like for my own gain kind of deal. Because I feel like that's where I've heard this used before. It is, well, God tells me that if I ask for something in his name, I can have it. Like, if I were to ask for a Lamborghini right now, I could have it in his name. But I always challenge that because it seems like the kind of person that's going to be looking at this from the right light isn't going to be asking for that. They're going to be asking for like healing of someone, or they're going to be asking for God's will to be done in some situation, or they're going to be asking for something that's honestly kingdom living and effect in the kingdom. And in that, I would agree with that statement as it being a blank check of God saying, if you truly believe and if this is something that's on your heart and you ask in my name, it's going to happen. And we come at that from the right light of not for moral gains and not for something that we can take that from, but more from the perspective of there's work to be done and we need God to do that work. Well, that's just kind of my first initial thought from yes and no on the concept of it being a blank check. For the right things, yes. But for the wrong perspective, no, it wouldn't be a blank check. Tell me I'm wrong.
Dan, that's you.
I would agree with you in that I think that this is in the context of a sovereign God and his kingdom. So, yeah, if I'm just Johnny non-believer suddenly decide and I read that verse and think, well, I'm just gonna pray for whatever, you know, what if he's, you know, where am I coming from in that prayer? Where's my standing there? If I come to my father and ask for something, he will my request and in an earthly way, in the context of what's best for me, what's best for the setting, what's best, you know, he just knows more than I do. So in my limited way, it's kind of harder, you know, God's not giving up his sovereignty because of this verse or something, saying, well, no, now I've got to do it. Whatever you said, now I have to do it. I have no choice. So it has to fall within the context of his sovereignty and his kingdom.
I can respond to that.
Okay.
That's how I can respond to this.
Sure.
Like, looking at where it sits in Mark as an example,
mm-hmm.
like, it's in the context of the lesson from the withered fig tree,
mm-hmm.
but it sits a little bit on an island relative to what's going on around it,
mm-hmm.
the way that we react to it. He curses the fig tree, he cleanses the temple, and then they come back and they see the fig tree. And from what the fig tree represents, and he talks about throwing a mountain into the sea, it seems to be...
again, tied to faith there.
The Temple Mount, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, but I just, it seems the context of that fig tree, it causes me to question whether there's more to that statement. It doesn't sit on itself, on its own in an island. I mean, I may have implied that it was in the way that we talk about it, but like, it's buffered in a way. Look what follows it. So, okay, therefore I tell you, whatever you ask in prayer, I believe that you have received it and it will be yours. And it follows, and whenever you stand praying, forgive if you have anything against anyone, so that your Father also who is in heaven may forgive you your trespasses. And so, like, that's an and conjoining those two things to imply like that they're correlated or they're tied together in some way. They seem to be able to exist on their own, depending on how we look at them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I come to that with questions on how it's, on why does it sit there with an and why is it that it is, after we learn the lesson from the fig tree, it is a, therefore I tell you, like, in light of this, whatever you ask in prayer, believe that you have received it. I don't know that I understand that fully enough to actually understand that, where it sits. That's where I'm at right at the moment.
All right.
Mike, you had no thoughts at all?
Yeah, they weren't right, though. Yeah, that's classic. Classic Mike right there. Yeah.
Surprised they didn't hug somebody and whisper McDouble.
Yeah, usually when people ask me questions about verses like that, I say, I'll pray on that. I don't think it applies to you. That's what I generally say. I said, it doesn't mean what you think it means. And then that's it. So, thanks, fellas.
Well, I was reading last week in Matthew 4 and Jesus doing all these miracles, and I was just thinking in that process throughout the week, I think, man, all the miracles that happen in the Bible, I mean, they're big things happening at the time, you know, establishment of the kingdom and so forth. But, you know, you got the apostles running around doing miracles in Acts. You've got Jesus doing anything he wants. I mean, but he's God. I mean, he doesn't think like I do. He's there for a purpose. But I would love to go into a children's hospital, whatever, and just start healing people and send them out. I mean, I don't see that gain like a terrible thing. It's not a selfish thing, and there's no gain on my part. But yet, that's not how it works. So I pray for a lot of people and. Sometimes things get better, sometimes they don't, you know, and sometimes God has a bigger purpose in letting people witness through their pain that I don't get, you know, or through an unanswered prayer, you know, our perspective non-answered, a no-answered prayer. His purposes are higher than ours. His understanding is higher than ours. There's things we just don't get. I guess that's the vagueness that I wish you could. I wish you could just take that and go, I said be healed. There's no choice. God has to do it.
Well, like, I've tried to explain that verse before, and really, like, I end up stopping short and saying, you know, to be honest with you, I could see where the confusion comes from, right? Like, because, I mean, for example, there's a lot of things that I ask for that, like, in God's sovereign rule, he will not give me because it is poor for me, even if I didn't think it was on the onset, you know? But it's not caveated with that. There's not a built-in caveat there. You know, so like I have a hard time. I don't know. I just have a hard time explaining that.
I mean, would anyone ever die? I mean, because we'd all, someone's going to be praying for him. You know, the whole population would just never end because, well, guess what? Death is a consequence of sin. So it's, you got forces battling there.
Well, plus, it doesn't take much to step into reality to realize that just flat out can't be true. You know what I'm saying? Like, if two guys are praying for opposing things and have faith that they believed it.
Yeah, and actually, I think, again, based upon where it sits, there's already a limitation. I tell you, whatever you ask in prayer, believe that you have received it and it will be yours. And whenever you stand praying, forgive if you have anything against anyone, so that your Father also who is in heaven may forgive you your trespasses. I obviously am not allowed to pray for, pray against this man that I've not forgiven. Right? Mm-hmm. So there's an implicit limit, even within its context, that says mm-hmm. this can't be anything. It still has to be contained with some sort of parameters, understanding the context that it even sits in. And otherwise, it's duplicitous and the whole thing's wrong. And so, although it's easy to pick it out and lift it up and say, this means everything, with where it sits, it implies at least that it's okay that there's a limit based upon what follows it. And so now you're in the process of trying to parse out what was Jesus' intention in saying that, mm-hmm. what limits reasonably exist within the context, not only of this verse and maybe the two things that surround it, but like with the way Jesus speaks in general, what are the limitations to what we're asking for and what God actually provides? Things otherwise for our good. If that's what he's providing for our good and we're asking something that is not for our good, do I expect that he's actually going to provide it? So full counsel of scripture would say there are limits on, you know, based upon his sovereignty and also understanding that if we're asking God to deliver something and as a sovereign God or as a father, he says, I will give you what is good. I will not give you the poor gift. I won't give you the snake when the fish is available. There's a fuller context even to understanding that. I'm still intrigued. Like
I understand the fig tree.
Well, as I said, just in the context of where the fig tree sits, like I'm still interested as like he could have said this a lot of different places, I think. So why does it exist as part of the fig tree story? As part of the cursing of the fig tree?
The cursing of fig trees is like a immediate example that stands right next to the way that Jesus went and cleared out the temple. And it's his way of saying, look, this thing's defunct. And that applies to both the temple and to this fig tree. The fig tree wasn't bearing any fruit. And he's looking at it, and essentially you've got this plant that all it's doing is it's taking, it's taking, it's taking. And it's not actually producing anything. It's not giving anything back. And at that point in history, that's exactly what the temple was. It was just an institution that was just taking and taking. And it was not really in any way connecting people to God, which is what it was originally designed to do. And so Jesus came into the temple and he's like, look, this is all messed up. And he clears it all out and treated the fig tree the same way that he treated the disciples. Come back the very next day and they see that fig tree is gone. It's dead.
It's cursed and withered.
And it takes years for trees to die. So
makes more sense to me.
Mm-hmm. So in that context, you follow him say, he said, look, the fig tree you cursed is withered. And Jesus says, have faith in God. Mm-hmm. Like,
you don't want to be the tree, do you?
What's well, truly I say to you, whoever says to this mountain, be taken up and thrown into the sea and does not doubt that what he says will come to pass, it will be done for him. I don't know. There's just interesting perspectives in there in that based upon the fig tree, we're talking about them telling the mountain to go in and it's done for him.
Well, that still implies that it's the power of God doing the moving.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, that's intriguing to me. I have some questions about that.
Yeah, you know, it kind of sounds like it is like the strong ability to be able to take it out of the context it's which it's in. It's like my buddy owns a candy store, and I walk in there, and he says, hey, you can have anything you want. That only applies in the candy store, right? That mm-hmm. that doesn't mean that I can roll out into town and start taking whatever I want. You mm-hmm. know what I'm saying? Like, it is given in a context that just, you know, has to be taken in perspective.
So what do you think are some of the limitations that you feel pretty solidly do actually apply there?
Oh, so like if there's implicit limitations on whatever you ask in prayer, believe that you've received it and will be yours, what are those? If we're to accept that there are limitations in that, what are those limitations?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So scripturally, like I think we have, so some of the things I said already, right? Like, that we are if we're praying for something that otherwise is not for our good, I don't believe God will provide it. Doesn't have any, doesn't be the purveyor of something that otherwise is not for the positive movement of his kingdom for us in general. So I don't know. I think that'd be one for me. Limits? I'm the only guy that's setting limits on it.
Yeah, that's hard to determine. I was like, how do I tell my child, here's what you can't ask for? It's more of a, I'll wait and see what they ask for. I mean, I realize God's sovereign. He knows what we're going to ask. I don't know that we on a human end can make this list of, here's the things that this doesn't apply to, because it's beyond our understanding in the first place. I mean,
I don't know. To a certain extent, that denies that Scripture doesn't otherwise speak to how God works, right? Like, I mean, I may not be able to say it's good or not good that you get a wagon, but I can say if I pray that someone be murdered, I feel like that's not going to happen.
Well, yeah.
Right? So, under those terms,
that doesn't violate Scripture.
How does God act?
Yeah,
I mean, there's people that know you personally, and there's things they won't ask you to do. You know, like, I very rarely have people come ask me to be part of a heist. Now, granted, I would be honored. I would not do it. But I would be honored that you thought I could play a role in your heist. But I mean, people don't ask me that because, you know, they just know I'm not going to do that. Is there some of that implicitly true, you know, with when you present things to God in prayer that he says, it's implicit because of my character that you are not going to ask me to do things that go against my... Is that its own packaged restraint?
Which otherwise, like, that mirrors 1 John 5, where it says, and this is the confidence that we have toward him, that if we ask anything according to his will, he hears us. That otherwise would seem to fit in with that understanding.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I feel like I've brought a lot of wisdom to this conversation.
Yeah.
And I'm glad I did it.
All right.
I gave it a shot.
Congratulations, Bova.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thanks, guys.
Yeah. I have some more things to ponder about that. Yeah, I don't think that's a... I mean, it's an explanation. I feel like there's more to that that I'm not grasping.
Mm-hmm.
That I feel like I need to spend some time trying to understand.
Yeah, it's one of those that every time I go to it, I like have to rethink. What is, I've, you know, I've read a studied on this a thousand times.
What did I think about this last time I read?
Yeah, God can do whatever he wants.
See, I'm going to listen to that explanation of the fig tree, and the next time I read it, I'm going to go, man, that's awesome. Without actually remembering the explanation of why that happened, I always just thought it was a knee-jerk reaction where Jesus is half irritated. Why don't you have fruit? Burn.
Jesus the tree hater.
Yeah. And, like, I always really enjoyed that story. In fact, you kind of ruined it with me with all your backstory that you put in there, which is probably more scripturally accurate. But, like, I don't know. I was very happy with him being like, why don't you have fruit? Done.
Like, you need to change your ways and the things that delight you about Scripture.
Angry fig hater Jesus. I don't know.
You want me to tell you lies in the bedroom? Know what you want? You want lies from me? Not going to happen. That's just what I think.
All right, Mike, you got another Dear Life in the Path?
I got one more. I didn't have it fired up at the ready. Incidentally, I'm getting instant hate mail about my critique of the scarf. Sorry about that.
Oh.
I was out of line.
Oh.
You were.
Who's on my side?
People.
Thanks.
They can probably be trusted. I respect them.
Thanks, y'all.
I'd let them live at my house.
Mm-hmm. He's getting text messages. I think that means his wife.
Dear Life from the... My husband and I are friendly with our neighbors. We are all smokers, but they don't smoke inside, and we do. It seems like they have decided that coming into our house every day to hang out is acceptable, which normally wouldn't be a problem. But they come in, sit on our couch, and don't say a word to us. Their eyes are glued to their tablets or cell phones instead. They respond to our attempts at conversation with grunts, never looking up from their entertainment. They'll stay for an hour or so, then leave. I have a feeling they're using our house as a smoking room, so they won't have to stay in the cold or be away from their entertainment. My husband is going to say something soon, because he's not happy, and our hints haven't been acknowledged. Is this as rude as I think it is?
They are absolutely using you. There's no doubt about it in my mind whatsoever. They are completely using your house as a smoking room. Welcome to having a smoking lounge for a home.
Absolutely.
Enjoy it.
Absolutely.
Here's what you do. You stop allowing smoking in your home.
Yeah. See what happens.
Of course, it's their home. They want to smoke it, they can do whatever they want. But if they're that upset about it, or just don't let those people in.
Just be like, Gerald and I have recently decided that we're going to stop smoking in the house. But come on over. We'll smoke out back. And if they stop showing up, you'll know that you were a smoker.
That's true. That'll filter that out pretty. I mean, you don't have to do it once.
Yeah.
That's all it takes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're like, oh, I can't smoke on my tablet. All right, bye.
You know, or you could just let them come in there and smoke if that's the deal. What's the problem? Why do they got to shine on some kind of phony conversation with you? Do you love them or don't you?
It's kind of weird. They're coming to your house.
Yeah.
Inside your house.
They're very friendly with the neighbors. And you smoke. It'd be like,
no,
it's like,
not.
Here's the deal. The same example is if I keep a bunch of extra soda in my fridge, some guy comes over, just rolls his way in, takes a soda, sits down on the couch for an hour, and then leaves. What's the difference?
That's still pretty weird, man.
I'm cool with it.
If they're not, like, communicating with you, if they're just, like, doing their tablets, I'd start charging them for internet usage.
Why are you got to be so spiteful?
I mean, I don't know if I go that
Why
far.
Why can't you just be generous with them? Let them come
I
over
like
and hang
Mike's
out at your
approach
place.
To hospitality here.
Yeah, just let them come over and hang out.
Why are you not communicating with me?
Yeah, until, what, do you want
hey,
them
man,
to come?
Hey, man, are you going
to
hug them?
Yeah, well, they come
Sit
in.
There and not
they
talk?
Come in your house and you're like, hey, where's your heirs? Go get your heirs and bring them on so you can put them on when you get in here. Just let them come over and be themselves. Hang out on your couch,
weird.
Drink a Shasta, back out they go. Thanks for stopping by. It's so hard for you
well,
to love people
I'm
that way.
Is there a limit to that, though? Like, what if 15 people show up and they keep doing that?
Yeah, man.
No, it's just the
And
two.
They stay longer than you want.
Well, these are my friends.
No,
just
they're
the
not.
Yeah,
they're
are.
Not your friends.
They're not
you
talking
are
to you.
You being hospitable to them, but that does not make them your friends.
What do I want
to
say? Dance, puppet. Be who I want you to be. That's not who they are.
They do not give two hoots about you.
They're Shasta drinkers, and they just want to drink it in my living room.
Hey, man, first off, there's no such thing as a Shasta drinker. That doesn't exist. Second off, you are not friends with that person. You are being used by them.
Look, what you
and
want...
You're getting no gain
You want
this.
To rubber stamp a bunch of boovas to hang out at your place and act like
no.
you and tell you you're great. And this is not a self-esteem train. You're going to be generous to them, let them come over, smoke in your place, and then they can leave.
People want to show up at my house and talk to me?
They
Definitely.
Don't want to talk to you. They just want to drink your soda and hang out in your place.
Have a soda, leave. If you're not going to sit here and talk to me, we're not getting anything, any kind of communication, any relationship building.
Right.
We're not...
What's
nothing's
in it for
happening.
You? Absolutely.
No. They can have the soda. I don't care about that. I'm being hospitable. They can have the soda. They can smoke.
Then why
can't
they have time in your place?
What's the point?
What's the difference between you being generous with soda and you being generous with time at your house?
If they're here for my soda, I'm giving them a soda and they're leaving.
Just a thought. Turn off your Wi-Fi.
I don't care about the Wi-Fi, man. I'm talking about just some random dude.
They have their pads.
I don't. Mike makes a good point, though. But if you don't care about the Wi-Fi and you don't care about the soda... But you do seem to care that they're sitting in your place,
no.
which is not as much of a material harm as the first two.
If they were sitting in my place and we were having
no, they
a conversation,
don't want to, they're not talking to you.
Out.
They're tableting it.
They're just, okay, at that point in time, I don't know why my house is open to them. Go find something else to do.
Because you're hospitable.
Go do something constructive. Stop just sitting at my house. Go do something. Maybe I'm being a jerk on this, and I'm more than happy to be that.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
If you want to sit down, come hang out, have a Shasta, smoke, whatever. Let's talk.
How much?
Let's,
how much do
have
they have to talk to you for you to be all right?
It has to be at least 3 minutes of conversation.
I'm not saying
at least 3 minutes, and there has to be at least 4 open-ended questions.
I'm not saying that they're right in what they're doing. It
yes,
does appear as if they're taking advantage of you. I'm
yes,
saying
you
your reaction to this as a generous man should come from a different perspective.
So here's the deal: is the easiest way to turn a situation that is not good into a situation that doesn't bother you is to embrace it.
Yeah.
Right. You can fight mm-hmm. like you can fight those guys, or you can say it's fine. It's not a problem for me anymore.
Absolutely.
Whatever.
Because you could either force them to change their ways, or you could just change how you look
no,
at it.
No, you just want to live
Y'all
in your trench of
used.
Hate.
Y'all
Get
enjoy,
out of the trench, Booba.
You enjoy being used for no gain to anybody.
It's not used if I'm giving it away.
That's correct. That is the right perspective. People can't steal anything from you that you're giving away for free.
Hey, man, I don't want this secondhand smoke in my house.
okay.
Get out.
What about the soda drinking?
Put
I don't
want this
example,
high fructose
you don't
corn
smoke,
syrup in
right?
my house.
But, like, it's the same thing. It's the same thing.
Get out of my house or talk to me.
That's not true. You don't mind them coming in and smoking as long as they talk with you.
Yes, that's true.
So it's
talk
not
with
the
me,
secondhand
smoke. I deal with, it's the secondhand
smoke. So
that's
the issue.
With
the
no
communication.
Conversation. Yes, that's what the
So message them.
That's a valid
You're
point.
Like They're a conversation them. Prostitute.
I am.
You're paying for conversation
hey,
through smokes and
I'm an attention jerk. So hey, man, guess what? I made 4 tubs of macaroni and cheese. Talk to me. Like, that's me. Hey, man, I recently purchased 20 McDoubles. Would you like to come over and talk to me?
My door's unlocked, and I have Shasta. Facebook. Anybody
that,
out there?
I'm putting that on a flyer in the front of my apartment complex that just says, hey, man, 2107, come on in.
Yeah.
I got Shasta.
And McDoubles.
And McDoubles. All you have to do is talk to me. 3 minutes conversation, 4 open-ended questions. You got yourself a Shasta.
Here's the deal. I'm not saying it's a normal worldly solution to the problem, but it is a solution to the problem. Is if as opposed to being upset that they're in there, just enjoy it that they're there.
Yeah, just not be
Change
upset
your perspective.
About it.
Yeah. It's an
Get
option.
Get out of my face.
Hey, I've taken that tack with, I probably, there's a good amount of
You've
people
taken
in my
that
life
tack with everyone you ever met.
With folks that, like, I just can't seem to be happy with anything they do. They generally irritate me. They do things wrong as far as I'm concerned. Like, we just don't see the eye to eye. And so, like, instead of dragging that stuff around, I just decided I'm going to stop being mad about it. Like, there's just no reason. It's not worth it. It's even getting the conversation to be upset about anymore. They will continually do the things that they do. It's just to be like, well, okay. I agree the same thing with the smokers and the soda drinkers. So let them come over and sit at your place. What's it hurting you?
What's it hurting them to talk to me?
Less like you like to sit around in your Grundies and you don't want people bothering you. That's a different situation.
That does not happen.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Then just let them come over and hang out at your place. Generous Troy.
All right, fine. Maybe I am being a stickler.
I'm going to call a bunch of people. Troy's place is open.
Tell him it's open.
I wore him down, boys.
Come on over for Shasta and a smoke.
Here we go. Secular says, the question was, is it as rude as I think it is? And Secular says, yes, it is. Although you and your neighbors are all smokers, it appears you have little else in common. You say your husband is going to say something soon. I recommend he speak up the next time these people show up and suggest that they leave their electronic devices at home. What bores?
What was it?
B-O-O-R-S, like as in the buffalo-looking character.
B-O-O-R-S?
Pig. Bores.
I thought, isn't that B-O-A-R-S?
I believe so.
This is boors.
The wild pig is a B-O-A-R-S.
I'm not sure. I've spelled it as it is represented. In either case, I disagree with Secular. Just let people come over. Why don't you love people, Boomer?
I love people.
There's a curtain over your heart. Just peel it back a little.
Yeah.
Let the sun in.
You can be the great and powerful Oz to others.
Yeah.
You're gonna listen to Life in the Past.
Hey, man. Steel, you want to get rid of those people? Do an interpretive dance to Godspell. They'll walk right out.
Hey,
you know what I'm saying? Start doing really weird stuff at your place. That's your option.
I do.
Either let them
I
sit
have a banana
there,
suit.
Either let them sit there and be themselves, or you do weird stuff that makes them not want
to
come over.
There ain't no way that they're sitting in my house for an hour and not talking to me.
Insist on doing an impersonation of the Aflac duck.
Yeah.
Over and over again.
Hey, man, would you like me to read Psalms like King David is singing in the blues? Let's do it.
Yeah. Say you're doing your own Chipmunk album, and here's the start of it. First 14.
I just haven't done the high pitch yet, and I do it in a low pitch.
Do Papa Was a Rolling Stone in Chipmunk voice. They're out. They won't stay.
I'm going to do this.
You don't know people like I know people. Hey, you're listening to Life in the Path. Hey, we've got to let you go. Thanks for hanging out. Actually, we don't have to let you go. We could go on this forever, but it's a mistake in your life.
We appreciate you.
You can catch us during the week at info. Shoot us an email at info@lifeinthepath.org or check out the website, lifeinthepath.org. You can check out past clips from the show, including this one. And, I don't know, hook up with whatever else we got going on in there. Make sure you check out our sponsors, the Eisenhower Team and WestfieldVetHospital.com. Thanks for listening to Life from the Path.